On Daf Kuf Mem Tesamid Aleph, Ahani Tanoi. It's approximately, I'd say, 2/3 of the way down. You see it?
Yeah.
Okay, great. The first word of the line is Tanoi. So we had a machlokas Tanoim about the following issue, and that is Lo Plug. Do we assume that when the Rabbanim make a gzera, they extend it even to cover cases where the chashash, the suspicion, is not applicable? Like, for example, the Gemara talks about you're not allowed to read certain documents. And the Gemara says that even if you have a document which... So the case of the Gemara was that we're afraid that if there was a mistake in the document, then he might be tempted to erase it. So the Gemara says, what if you write it on the top of a wall where it's hardly likely that he would climb up to the top of the wall and start erasing, you know, that which is written on the top of a wall? So the Gemara quotes a machlokas Tanoim about that. And some Tanoim are of the opinion that Lo Plug, even if now there's no justification for the gzera, it's still going to remain Asur. And others say, no, this is not the case that we were worried about. And therefore it's Mutta. So that machlokas Tanoim, the Gemara says, is Kahani Tanoi, is identical with the following machlokas Tanoi. The Sanya we learned in the Braisa, Ein Roim B'mara B'Shabbos. He shouldn't look into a mirror on Shabbos, because he's going to see that maybe his hair is not exactly even, and he might come to forget himself and actually cut off one of his hairs, or something along that. You know, he might shave off his head. And Rabbi Meir says, Matir b'mare hakavua b'kosel, which means that if he has a mirror that is engraved and it's permanently situated in a kosel, then the gzera doesn't apply. And we're not going to prohibit him from looking into this mirror. So the Gemara immediately asks, Maishna, what is this distinction that Rav Meir is making between a mara kavua b'kosel? Why is he matir in that case? So the Gemara suggests, perhaps, adahachi v'hachi, if let's say he looks at this mirror and now he's going to try to get himself today we would say a shaver, in those days a razor or some sort of scissors, is midkar. He's going to remind himself, wait a minute, today is Shabbos, and he won't come to cut off any hairs. Is if that be the case, then mara sheinu kavua nami. Rabbi Meir should have gone a step further, and he should have said that even if it's a movable mirror, it's not permanently affixed to the wall, and the hachi hachi midbar, until he starts running around to look for his scissors, he'll remind himself that it's Shabbos. So we still don't understand how to justify the distinction that Rabbi Meir is making between a mara that's kavua and a kavua b'kosel and a mara that's not kavua b'kosel. So the Gemara answers that if it's a case of a mirror that's made of glass, you know, glass meaning our kinds of mirrors, then everybody agrees that's not a problem. He's definitely going to remind himself before he starts cutting off a hair on Shabbos. But Hacha, the Bryce is talking about a case of Memare Shel Mateches Askinon, that this mirror is made of metal, and what he could do is Ba'atma Megalech Esaseir. He doesn't even have to bring a knife or scissors in order to cut his hair, but rather there's the mirror itself. The mirror itself could play a double role. On the one hand, it's a mirror, but it's also a knife. It's also a cutting utensil. So he doesn't have to run around and look for another utensil. In other words, the mirror is shaped in a way, and it's made out of metal, that he could use it as a knife. And the reason, therefore, you're not allowed to look into the mirror in such a case is like Rabba Bar Avua. And what does Rabba Bar Avua say? Diomar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Bar Avua, Mipnei Ma Omru Chachomim Mara Shol Matechas Asur B'Shabbos, Mipnei Sha'odom Osui Lahashir Bohanimin Hamidul Dolim. And we're talking about Sa'aros. There are some hairs on his head that are partially cut, but they're still hanging on, and therefore they don't look similar to the other hairs on his head. And Saros Nitlishu Min HaRosh V'Adayin Lo Nekru L'Gamrei. Okay, so the Seir is called a Nema, and it's partially cut off his head, but it's still hanging on, and it's not equal Enam Shavos L'Shar HaSeir. And therefore, if he cuts them off on Shabbos, then this is going to be a violation of what's called Meleches Gozes, like shearing. And now we're going to have a Machlokes Tanoim. The Tanakhama, who says it's Asur, and now we're using a Marashal Mateches. Oh, so if it's a Marashal Mateches that's not attached permanently to a wall, then we understand why there's a problem. And we're saying that everybody would agree with that's a problem, because he may inadvertently, without reminding himself of Shabbos, just grab onto this metal utensil and cut off a hair. Now the Tanakhama is going to extend that to the case of a Mateches Kvua Bakosel. Now, if it's Kvua Bakosel, I guess let's assume it's impossible for him to take it off, or nearly impossible. So therefore, in this case, he's not going to be able to use this Mateches and immediately cut his hair, because it's Kvua Bakosel. And yet the Tanakhama prohibits it. Why? Because of Lo Plut. And Rabbi Meir says, no, the Chacham are going to make distinctions in the Gzera in a case where it's a movable mirror made of metal and he could use it to cut it off. Immediately he might be tempted to forget that it's Shabbos and cut off his hair, and that's prohibited. But if it's Kavua B'Kosel, and therefore we don't have to suspect that he would cut off a hair, then he's allowed. He's mutter. So it comes out that this issue that we saw earlier about Lo Plug in the Gzeres of Chachamim is really an issue again between these two Tanoim. Okay, now we're going to go back to what's called Shtari Hedyotos, meaning that the Chachamim prohibit reading on Shabbos certain things that, although they're not technically speaking documents, but it's a little bit similar to reading a document. So we're afraid that he might read these documents, which is a violation of a Dabru Dover, that we not speak on Shabbos the way we speak on Chol. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa, Ksav Hamahalich Tachas Atzura. So he has images of animals, different kinds of animals, that are inscribed, engraved in a wall, and underneath each one of these images they write the name of the animal, or v'tachas hadyuknoos. These are images of human beings, and they apparently record certain historical events and they engrave this on the wall. Like, for example, it seems that when David battled against Goliath, they created this image, this engraving, and that was to commemorate that great historical victory, right? So again, underneath these engravings of a dmus, of some sort of an image of so-and-so, they would write and inscribe the names of, let's say they write David and Goliath, right? Like you go to a museum and you'll see a painting of David and Goliath. So underneath is, but that's not engraved, but it's got a sign there. They tell you what the name of the painting is. So the Braisa says, Osul Kroso B'Shamis, that reading from these like artistic museum pieces, reading the writings, that's a gzera because he might come to reach Shtarei Hedyotos. And apparently, in the Bryce's perspective, there's a very great similarity here between writings that are totally secular, meaning they belong to the weekday, to the Sheish Yismei HaMaaseh, which is called Uvdin Dechol, and this kind of a reading of names that are inscribed. Udyukna atzma af b'chol osul istakelva. In other words, if he's only interested in the history, so he's reading the names on the bottom, that's one thing. That's a Shabbos problem because of Shtarei Hedyotos. But if he's enjoying the benefit of these engravings, that's something that's prohibited even during the weekday. And this is going to be a big question about visiting, you know, galleries in museums and so forth, the art galleries. He says, Mishum shenemar al tifnu el ha'lilin, that you shouldn't look at the idols. And the Machzis HaShekel, the Magen Avraham, these are great poskim, they say, Dafka istaklus be'iyun ubisbonenus alvo b'riya muteres. So that if you're just seeing these images very quickly, you know, superficially, that's allowed. But we're talking about his taklus, where he's really looking carefully, and he's contemplating these images, and that's like a lilin. Now, my suspicion is, I don't know if I'm right or not, that we're talking about something that's three-dimensional. And that's why it's a lilin. It comes under a problem of idols. If it's three-dimensional, it means it not only is it flat on a surface of, you know, like length and width, but it's also protrudes from the painting. It's like the issue of bust, you know, a bust in a museum, right? That's also a problem because it's a figure, it's an engraved figure. My Talmuda, how do we derive this from a pasuk? Now, the pasuk itself is referring to an avodah zarah. It says, Elohei ma'aseichah lo sasu lachem ani Hashem Elokeichem. But here we're not talking about an idol that's being worshipped. We're talking about some sort of an engravement that may have artistic beauty to it, and it commemorates a historical event. It's like, I don't know if you ever heard of a Belgian painter called Rubens, very famous from like five centuries ago. So he has, you know, a very famous painting of Daniel in the lion's den, you know, where he's sitting around with all the lions, you know. It takes up a half a wall, and I don't remember which museum I saw it in, but anyway, it's quite famous. So that's to commemorate a historical event. It could even be biblical. Om Rav Chanin, al tifnu el midatchem. Okay, we have to try to figure this out. He's taking the word elilim and now he's substituting the word midatchem. So I'll read to you his beer. He says, Elilim Loshen Chalolim Ve'alev Nikra Chalol. Now, what this seems to mean is that the Elilim here is a reference not to an idol Avodah Zarah Mamish, but rather some sort of Chalolim. And he made these Chalolim, I guess these engravings, not for the purpose of worshipping them, but Litzir Bi'alma, for, just as we said before, for art. And it's done Midatchem Umirtzonchem. And it's created by your will. It was your free decision to create this. And the Torah says, Al Tifnu Aleihem, which means don't contemplate them. Don't focus your attention on them. Okay. Now, at this point, what I'd like to do is read a summary here in the English translation. You have the English translation, right? So we'll take a look at the following. He says that writing, or a caption he calls it, that runs under a picture or a table axe, I guess that's a French word, art that's drawn on walls, pictures of animals, or depictions that depict famous people and scenes. Oh, he mentions David and Goliath, as we said before, the binding of Isaac. So these are mamish biblical paintings. Now, underneath the picture, there would be a caption identifying the animals or the persons portrayed. And it's forbidden on Shabbos to read these, lest one come to read Shtari Hedyotos. So the prohibition against reading on Shabbos or Yontif covers a wide range of materials that just practical items such as a guest list. Okay, we talked about a guest list, that was the previous sugya, or of even books of secular wisdom might come under this isur. So that's the broader definition of Shtari Hedyotos, not just business documents, but it could include all sorts of social writings and artwork. And to gaze upon the tableau, it's the tableau itself, or I guess the painting itself, is forbidden even on weekdays, because it says, do not turn to the idols. What is the derivation? The verse is interpreted to mean, do not turn to that which comes from your minds. That is, do not turn to works created by man that are inspired by his own thoughts. The word elilim, idols, which is cognate with chalolim, which mean recesses, is interpreted as denoting the recesses of man's heart and mind. And this he says in the name of the Chidushei Aran. Alternatively, now he quotes a Meiri, the Gemara should be rendered Al Tifnu El Midatchem. Do not remove God from your minds. Meaning, do not gaze at man-made works, for when you do so, God is not present in your thoughts. See, I'm not sure if I actually resonate with that, because if you see a great work that was created by man, then ultimately you're going to praise God, because these are divine gifts that man has inherited. If God bestows upon a person the ability to create beautiful art, then I wouldn't say that you've excluded God from your thoughts. I mean, we have brachas that you make. You see a great scholar, you make a bracha. If he's Jewish, you make one bracha. If he's not Jewish, you make a different bracha. What you're doing is you're thanking God for that creation. And there are many animals or different scenes that you have. You know, you go to Niagara Falls and you make a bracha.
All right, now that's not really a good example because that's really a natural phenomenon. We're talking about a man-made creation. But still, even when I see and I behold a great man-made creation, you know, let's say I was a mathematician, I would read Einstein or physics, you know, E equals MC squared, and I behold how great it is, I make a bracha. So I thank Hashem. Anyway, he quotes Rishonim that this Iser applies only to gazing at animals at items that had been designated for idol worship, and even if they haven't been used as such. So that's a whole different shita. Then we're not talking about classic art as we know it today. You know, like European art, that's not for idol worship. You know, if you go back 500 years in history, then art was almost all exclusively for, as part of worship. And you could go into certain galleries and you feel like you're walking into a church. He says, the Torah teaches us here that one should not pay attention to matters of idolatry, lest he become attracted to it. So this would be an interesting question about mythology. Like I mentioned before, Rubens, he's, I don't know what percentage, but a very high percentage, if not all of his artwork is based on Greek mythology. So I wonder if that comes under Avodah Zarah as well. If something was already used for idol worship, then you are forbidden to gaze at its beauty in any event, because then you're benefiting and you're having hanah from Avodah Zarah. Now, some Rishonim maintain that the prohibition is of a more general nature. One should not gaze at works of art, even if they are not idolatrous, because preoccupation with their beauty diverts a person's attention away from the service of God. That's what we said in the name of the Me'iri before. It is only the beauty of God's works at which one may gaze to gain an appreciation of His wondrous creations. According to both opinions, the prohibition does not apply to casual glancing, that was the Mogen Avram we mentioned earlier, or to gazing at insignificant items that are not alluring, like, for example, a caption under a picture. Okay. So this is, we stepped into a whole issue over here, a very contemporary issue. All right, the Mishnah says, Mafis Odom Im Bonov. This is, we're talking about lotteries, and the question is, are you allowed to cast lotteries on Shabbos? And the Mishnah says that if it's amongst the members of his household at the table, and he's going to determine, like, how to divvy up the food, then that's permissible, but only on the condition that he doesn't set up what's called a mana gedola keneged mana ktana. So we'll try to figure out under what circumstances it's permissible to make this lottery, under what circumstances is it prohibited, and why is it prohibited. So the Gemara says the following. It says, Mafis Adam in Bonavim Bebnei Beis al Shulchan. It doesn't say Mafis Adam al Hamanos, that you could take a lottery to divide up the various portions. And we're going to derive from that in Bonavim Bebnei Beiso in Vim Acher Lo. That the reason why the Mishnah goes out of its way to say that you're allowed to set up this lottery with your children is to exclude someone else who is a foreigner, so to speak. In other words, he's not one of your family members. And then it's prohibited to use the lottery method. My timer. So what's the difference? Why is it that if you want to make a lottery, then if they're not part of your household, they are other b'nei Adam, they're other people, then there's a prohibition. And the answer is, ki de Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, de Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, b'nei Chabura, hamakpidim zel zeh, over mishum midah, u mishum mishkal, u mishum minyan. So if you have groups of people that belong to, let's say, an entourage, they're on the way, they're sitting in one house, and they're, you know, socializing. Each one is eating a seuda liatzmo. So do we see them as if they're eating together or not? So it depends. If makpidim zel zeh, let's say, for example, you have one portion of food, let's say a chicken, and I don't have one, so I want to make a deal with you. I'm going to borrow your chicken, and we're going to calculate exactly the size and the weight of the chicken, and I'm going to have to pay you back exactly that chicken. And that's called makpidim zeh zeh. And a makpid b'mida b'mishkal u'b'minyan. In other words, there's no mechila here. It's not like, you know, oh, just give me a portion of chicken, I'll return it to you after Shabbos or something. Right. Even though there's very little significance, you know, what difference it make, you know, if I gave you a chicken that's, you know, that's this size or that size, but nevertheless, they're makpidim zeh zeh, even if there's a nuance of a difference, they want to be absolutely exact about it. And if that's their minhag on Shabbos and Yontif, that they're really, when they lend each other portions of food, they're very exact about it, to try to evaluate its weight and its size, is then ovrim, mishum, etc. Then they're going to violate this kind of an iser, which is called mida and mishkal. And I suspect that this is going to be what we call the gzera of mekach u'memkar, that the rabbanon said you're not allowed to implement business transactions on Shabbos and Yontif. And now that he's measuring it to make sure that it's exactly this size and this weight, then it is a violation of mekach u'memkar, which is again a rabbinic violation. Umishuminya, or for example, the exact number. So imagine if you ask me for, you know, a half a dozen eggs or something like that, so we calculate it in exact numbers. And that's an Isur Midrabanan, to make that kind of an exchange on Shabbos or Yontif of foodstuff that is being weighed and measured and counted, because then it's similar to mekach u'memkar, which is prohibited midrabanan on Shabbos and Yontif. So again, if you're very meticulous and you know very nuanced, you know, to be medagdic exactly what the volume of these pairs are, you're going to weigh them and maybe measure them, or you're going to calculate exactly how many payers there were, and therefore he's chayav to give it back to you. So this group of people, these b'nei chabura, that are makpid, they're very meticulous and demanding on each other. And on Yontif and Shabbos, we're afraid that mitochak pedosam, because they're makpid one on the other, is yavo, they're going to come to modeid, mishkal, and minyan. They'll calculate and weigh the numbers, etc., etc., of the food that they're taking one from the other, and then they're going to violate these isurim of mekach u'memkar, these rabbinic isurim. Okay, so that's number one. Now, the Bryson now goes on and has another case. This is not a brayso, this is a statement of Shmuel. And he says that the same halacha applies in the case of lovin, mishum lovin uporim biyantif. It sounds like, in addition to the issue that we mentioned before, that it's domet, similar to mekach u'memkar, moreover, it's like a halva, and it's like I'm lending you kilu money, and you're going to pay me back. Right? I'm not allowed to say helveni, you know, lend me something on Yontif or Shabbos, because we're afraid that you might write it down, forgetting that it's Shabbos. And the same thing applies if he uses a Lashon Piron. You know, if he says to his friend, here, I'm paying you up for what you gave me. Once again, we're afraid that maybe this is going to be, inadvertently, they might write it on a ledger so that he remembers that he actually paid him up in case it comes up at a court. So therefore, the Mishnah says that this kind of transaction is only mutar b'lashon she'ela. In other words, I could say, lend it to me. But I want to borrow it as a loan. You know, I have to say, lashon she'ela, not lashon halva. Now, the makbid zelzeh there, and we're afraid that they're going to start using a Lashon Halva and a Lashon Piron. And all of this is because the Lova, who wants to borrow this food, he's Choshesh to use the language She'ela. Because the language of She'ela indicates Shedoresh Lashiva Kimos Shehi Kishe'ela Shechozeres Biatzma. So the language of Halva indicates that the payment will have to be Beloshen Piron, as you're not just returning something that of mine that you're holding on to, but rather it's a piron, it's like a payment of a chov. So once again, I'm trying to figure out why it's the lova, but he says that the lova suspects. Oh, I see what he means. He means the lova is inhibited, and he doesn't want to use the language she'ela, because the language she'ela seems to indicate that it automatically reverts back to its owner. Okay. So let's see what we have now. We're going to turn to Kuf Mem Tes Amid Beis. So before we do that, I just want to give the, you know, offer the English summary. Let's see if I can find it. One second, here it is. It should be right here on the top. He says, how come I'm not finding this? Here it is. So a person may cast lots for portions of food with his children and the members of his household. However, with others, he may not cast lots. Okay. Now, what's the reason for this? So, based on the statement of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, that members of a group, if they are, let's say he gives examples of travelers on the road, or people that happen to be together under one roof, each person has his own food, and they're particular with each other. They don't even forgo small amounts. They're not going to share their food, etc., unless they receive a portion exactly the same size, the same value in return. And then he adds the following comment. He says, normally, a group of people are together on Shabbos or Yom Tov, will share their food and drink, and they're not going to transgress any law. But people who are makpid zelzeh, that's the language here, b'nei chaburish makpidim zelzeh, you know, they're not generous and magnanimous towards one another, they are likely to violate the law regarding measuring, weighing, and counting. Okay, so far so good. So there's an Isur Drabanan to measure an item on Shabbos and Yontif. And these people are so particular with each other, they'll measure out before they take one in order to make sure that they get back exactly the same amount. No one's cheating them. So therefore, these people who are accustomed to such a practice are likely to measure what they have on Shabbos and Yontif. Weighing is prohibited on Shabbos and Yontif. And due to their stinginess, these people typically weigh whatever they're giving from one to the other. They'll do it on Shabbos and Yontif, and they'll violate that Isur. Not only that, the Bryson Beitzer tells me that you're not allowed to mention the total of one's purchase on Yontif. So let's say, for example, if a dinar, which is their currency, would buy 100 nuts, if he already took 60 nuts, he shouldn't be able, he's not allowed to say, give me another 40 to complete the amount of 100. So our group of stingy people, who are makpidim zedzeh, they'll always remind the giver of the full amount to which they are entitled. So if somebody's giving out, they're going to come forward and say, well, this is what I'm entitled to. And that would be a violation of Mida. Of Minyan. Alright, now we get to Mishum Lovin Uporin. So there's a prohibition against borrowing and paying back on Yontif or on Shabbos. Okay, so you're not allowed to borrow, and that's mentioned in the Mishnah. It all depends upon whether you say Hashileni or Halveni. So these stingy people that we're talking about, this group, they will not say Hashileni because that connotes the loan of an item that must be returned intact. The borrower wishes to avoid any such demand by the lender. And therefore he will say, Halveni. So one second, I lost it for a second. If he'll say, Hashileni, that means it has to be returned intact. So the borrower, he doesn't want to commit himself to return the item intact. So therefore he says Halveni. Now you're not allowed to pay back a debt on Shabbos because the borrower could possibly erase the record of the loan from his ledger. If one uses the expression Chazara rather than Piron, then it's permitted. That's what we have so far. And now we're on top of Kuf Mem Tes Amid Beis. Ukidivrei Hillel Af Mishum Ribis. And there's an additional Iser here of Ribis, which has nothing to do with Shabbos. But if I say Halveni, that's called Sa B'Sa. Because if the price goes up, and I pay you back the same amount, and now it's worth more than at the time when I borrowed it. So you, the lender, are getting back more for your buck. That's called ribis. And therefore, we're not allowed to cast lots with people who are not members of the household. Because members of a group who are particular with each other will transgress the laws of ribis when they borrow food from one another. And they pay back the same amount, because they're paying back the volume, but not value. they're not market value. So members of one group are not particular about price differences on small items such as a loaf of bread, and therefore any price increase is not paid, it's not significant. That's not called ribbis. That would be for a normal group. But in the case of stingy people, even a very small difference is of paramount importance. The borrower pays it only because he's too embarrassed not to return the original amount of merchandise to the person who had benefited him by granting him the loan. So now the increase of the value is given only in consideration of the loan, therefore it is ribbis. So if you repay a loan of merchandise with the same amount of merchandise, that's called saw b'saw, where in this case, Basil Hill says even kikar b'kikar, then we have a violation of ribbis. Because if in the interim, the value of, there was inflation in the value of that particular food that you borrowed, or a kikar, even a small kikar according to Hillel, then you violate, at least minarabbanan, an iser ribbis. And those who reject Hillel will say that since we're dealing with such trivial amounts, the parties are not usually particular about such sums. Now, let's see if we can begin to understand, in this light, the difference between members of your household and that lottery, as opposed to people who are not members of your household. So the Gemara says that ihachi, that if drawing a lot is because of all the concerns that we mentioned before, is therefore bonavu b'nei beso nami. We should also extend this iser to the members of his family. The fact that they're drawing lots seems to indicate they're very particular with one another, even though they're members of the same family. So the Gemara says, bonavu b'nei beso, hainu taima, the reason why we relax this prohibition of casting lots in the case of Bnei Besos, Kid Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Yom Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Mutar Lahalvos Bonavu Bnei Beso Beribis, Kidelat Ina Iman Tam Ribis. Now, I think this is an educational principle, if I'm not mistaken. We're talking about children and household members who rely on their father for support. That's called Samach al Shulchan Aviv. Everything that they have really belongs to him. So any interest that they pay basically comes out of his pocket, because whatever they have, that's his. So if their father lends them interest, then it's only an educational exercise. Baruch Shekivanti. Because they should feel what it's like to be distressed by having to pinch themselves to pay interest to the borrower. As a borrower. They'll understand that the punishment for the law of ribbis is great because of the, as we said before, the distress of the borrower. So now, if dependents, right, Somach al Shulchan Aviv, are particular about the exact amounts of money that their father allocates to them, then he, the father, I guess, would be prohibited to lend them on interest, because they would be viewed as independent parties. In other words, the fact that the father is actually measuring out what he's giving, what he's allocating to the children, in order to make sure that he gets back exactly what he gave them, that indicates that he's not treating them as Samach al Shulchan Aviv, as if they totally depend upon him, but rather as independent parties. I don't understand why it doesn't depend. This should be determined objectively. Are they Samach al Shulchan Aviv or not? I guess it's that gray area. But the very fact that they're very careful to measure out exactly how much money they're taking so they'll return exactly that amount, that indicates that they are independent agents. So if we permit a loan then that shows that they are not particular about how much of their father's money they receive. They acknowledge that everything belongs to their father in any event. And now we're going to apply that logic to the case of the father who's distributing portions of food to his children, members of his household. They're not paying for the food, and therefore they're not overly particular about the size of their respective shares. If the father casts lots to allocate the portions, his purpose is clearly not to avoid a serious dispute, but only to make a fair allocation without arousing jealousy. So there's no concern, therefore, that they would violate the prohibitions of measuring, weighing, and counting on Shabbos and Yontif. Let's just review a little bit, backtrack. He says, we were prohibited by the Chacham to use a Lashon Alva or to use a Lashon Piron because of Shema Yichtov. We could only use a Lashon of She'ela. Now these people are Makbid Zemzeh, this group. They're going to use a Lashon Alva and Piron because they're afraid that with a Lashon She'ela, maybe, he says, Shema Yidrosh Lahashiva. So the Lova who's borrowing, he's afraid to use the language of She'ela because maybe Shema Yidrosh Lahashiva Kimos Shehi Kishe'ela Shechozeres Bi'atzma. So since in Alva, they're makpin on the Lashon Alva, they don't want to use the Lashon She'ela, and Memela Af Bi'piron Omer V'Lashon Piron V'lo B'Lashon Chazara. So that's number one. Now we're on the top of Kuf Mem Tes Amid Beis. Ukidivre Hillel Af Mishum Ribis. According to Hillel, in addition to the problem of Shema Yichtov, and perhaps something similar to what we saw about a reading from Shtar Hedyotos, we also have an issue, according to Hillel, of ribis, because if he uses halva and we're talking about so beso, or as Hill would apply to kikar bekikar, even in case of a dover muot, we're afraid that the chita might soar up in price, and there's a ribis issue when he returns more than what it was worth at the time of the halva. Now we get to these Bnei Chabura, and they are close, dangerously close, to violating ribis. Because since they're makpid one on the other, and they're not mochel, even for a dover muot, so that if there's an addition of a tosefes ma'at yoker, that the lova gives back a little bit more, that's called ribis. Those who are not makpid, if you have a group of people that are not so, you know, stingy one with the other, and they're mochel on the tosefes, then it's not ribis. Now, let's go to the Bnei Chabura. If Bnei Chabura makpidim krovim lavar al isurim ela, since Bnei HaChabura makpidim, then they get dangerously close, as we said before, to violate these various Isurim. So the Chachamim recommended that they shouldn't make any sort of partnership at all, lo yishtatfu klal zem zeh, so that it shouldn't come to any of those violations. But if they created that partnership, nishtatfu, then Asurim lachlok b'Shabbos v'yontif, they're not allowed to divvy up their shutfis on Shabbos Yontif because they might violate these Isurim. Okay. Now, the Gemara now wants to explain, based on these premises, the Mishnah that says it's also to make a goral, with those who are not part of the family, because the Goral itself will be a clear-cut positive proof. It would be an absolute hochacha that they're being makpid. And once they're being makpid, then we don't allow this chaluka, because they might come to violate those various isurim that we mentioned earlier, about like kriyas shtari chovos, or perhaps ribis. So Gemara now asks the hochi, if this be so, that we don't want to allow a goral in machirim sheinu b'nei beiso, because they might come close to, they're very dangerously close to violate these isurim, then banav ubnei beiso nami. This should also be prohibited, to make a goral amongst the bnei beiso. And if I understand correctly, the logic of the Gemara's kasha is that the lottery itself is proof positive that they're being makpid zelze. And he writes here in the note, klomar, im hatartzon hoya miyashev ki afim achirim nitan lahofis ubanav ubnei beisa lav dafkahu. If the Tartzin would have accepted that maybe the Tana of our Mishnah just mentions Banav Bnei Beiso to be Mechadish, that even with them it's also Lahafis, Mona Gdola, Umona Ktana, that would be Meyushav. But now the Tartzin, Yishev Ki, Im Achirim Osim Yishim Kpeda, then even by Banav Bnei Beiso we should ask it for the same reason of Kpeda. Now you may ask, but if the Bnei Beiso are Samach L'Shulchan Aviv, HaKol Shel Balabayis, the Gemara thinks that Kevan Shebo Litein Lam Umakpidim Al HaChalokim Uboim Lahatil Goral, they are so meticulous about each one's portion that they set up a lottery, is therefore even with regard to the children, the Bnei Beiso, the members of his household, we have this Isur, Shayach, this Isur, Mido, etc. Because once they're Makfid, then it's similar to Mekach u'Memkar. So the Gemara answers, Banu Bnei Beiso, Hainu Taimo, why is it mutter for them to set up this lottery? Is Kidrab Yehuda. Amarav, the Amarav Yudah Marav, Muta la halvos le bonav u bnei beiso ber ribis, kedei lat iman tam ribis. So even though these members of his family are smuchim al shulchano, I shouldn't say even, I should say because they're somach al shulchan aviv, then there's no iser ribis. Because he's just teaching them how to feel and empathize with what it means to have to pay ribis. But everything is from him, and anything they own is his, and there's no isa ribis. And for that reason, regarding Bnei Beiso, there's no isa of Mida, Mishkal, Uminyan. And the isa alvad piran on Yontif doesn't apply. Because since everything belongs to him, then there's no kpeda demanding to be medagdek on the chalukas mama. And even though they set up a lottery, that's not bishum kpeda, that's only kedei lashvosam, so that no one would get jealous one or the other if he gets a larger portion. So Yehochi, the Gemara now raises the following kasha. If they were matir b'nei beiso, because there's no Iser Ribis in Bnei Beiso, because everything belongs to the father, and they just want to give the children, educationally give them a taste of what it means to pay Ribis. He's saying, Mona Gedola Keneged Mona Ketana Nami, why can't we be Matir in the case of a lottery to divide up a Mona Gedola Mona Ketana? That also should be Mutter, to give them a taste of what it means to get involved in some sort of, you know, Ferris, some sort of a lottery situation, a gambling situation, that would be the word. And since everything belongs to the Baal HaBayis, in any event, there's no Gezel here. So why does the Mishnah prohibit a Goral for the Mona Gedola and the Mona Ketana? And Gemara says, Enochinami, in the case of Bnei Beso, it's Mutter. And now we have to add a few words to that Mishnah. B'chisuri Mechzera B'hachi Ketani. This is how we're going to have to learn the Mishnah as if it was missing a part. And it should read as follows. Mephis Adam im Bonavim B'nei Beisal Shulchan Afilu Mona Gedola Kineged Mona Ketana. And my time Kid Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav, that you're allowed to lend to B'nei Beso B'ribis in order to give them a taste of ribis, and there's no Easter at all. And here also, you're allowed to be mafis imoyim almanas almona gedola keneged mona ketana in order to give them a taste for what kubia, what gambling is all about. Now the Gemara of Firzois, how to interpret our Mishnah, in Bonavim B'nei Beso, in, then you're allowed a lottery on Shabbos, but im acherim lo, no lottery will be allowed for others, even if all the monos are equal. My time, but why is this asur? And the answer is, Kid Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmua, that which we brought earlier in Amud Aleph, that the Bnei Chabura makpidim, and therefore they violate Mishum Mida Mishkal Minyan. And here also, since they're making a goral, and it means that they're being makpid one on the other, so we should be choshesh, we have to be afraid of the possibility that they'll violate all these isurim. So again, until this point, we derive the din of goral al shulchan v'shabbos that's mentioned in the resha of our Mishnah, that you're allowed with your bnei beso, and it's prohibited with others who are not part of your immediate family. Now the Gemara wants to explain the seifa of the din. It says, "Ubilvach l'iskavi lasos mona gedola keneged mona ketana," which is a case of a goral during the weekday. So the Gemara explains the Mishnah, mona gedola keneged mona ketana af b'chol l'achirim osur. So kind of a lottery is gambling, and that we're not going to permit even during the weekday. My taima mishum kubia, this is gambling. And it's like that there are pieces that they play with, and you put money in escrow, and according to all the rules of the game, until one of them is zoch in the moment. And that's an asmachta. Shekol echad somech al daito al kach shehu yizke b'mamon. Asmachta means that each one of the gamblers assumes that he's a great gambler and he's going to win. If he would have known that he's going to lose, then he wouldn't have agreed to be part of the gamble. And since lo gomer b'daito l'akno, since he really never had a gemiras das to be makda, therefore he's not zocha. I mean, the other person who clears out his money is really violating Yisur Gezel, at least Mirabana. I mean, the money is being delivered to him, so it's not Gzela Doraisa, but it's Gzela Drabana. And here too, if he decides to be Matil Goral, and he's relying totally that he'll win the Goral and he'll get the Mona Gedola, then he's not being Makta B'Lev Shalom, and here we have another instance of a Gzela Drabana. Now going back to the Mishnah says that Matilim Chaloshim Al Hegdeshim Biyontif Avalo Al Hamonos. So Kodshim would be Mutter to have these Gorolos, but not Monos. So the Gemara wants to explain what Monos means. What does the Mishnah have in mind? Avalo Al Hamonos. Om Rav Yaakov Brei Debas Yaakov Avalo al hamonos shel kodshim shel chol biyontif. We're not going to establish a lottery amongst the kohanim for the portions of kodshim of chol, let's say of erev yontif, on yontif. So Gemara says pshita. Certainly, we wouldn't set up these gorolos for kodshim of erev yontif. since he could have done this on Erev Yontif, but Mal the same, I might have thought that a whole uksiv, the Amech, the Amcha Kimrive Kohen, Posigin Oshea, and the Novi now is castigating, he's rebuking the Jewish people on the fact that they were Bale Meriva. They were individuals who instigated all sorts of disunity and altercations, and he says that Hashem said, one second, let me just make sure this is the pasuk. He says, your people are like quarrelsome Kohanim. Okay. So I'm not sure if the Kohanim are quarreling with amongst themselves or people are quarreling with the Kohanim. And therefore, this indicates that Kohanim are quarrelsome. As Afilu Monos the Chol Nami. What does that mean? The Kohanim should be allowed to cast lots on Yontif, even for portions of sacrifices that were offered on the previous weekday. This is all the Hava Mina. And Rashi says so that they will not quarrel over the allocations of the portions. In other words, dafka because the Kohanim are quarrelsome, we want to avoid those quarrels. And instead of trying to figure out who'll get a bigger mana and who'll get a smaller mana, what we'll do is we'll cast lots. And that completely circumvents the problem of the quarrel here that we're afraid of over the allocation of the portions. Kamash Malan, the Mishnah therefore teaches us that this is not permitted. We're not going to allow these lotteries simply to avoid these altercations, that if the Kohanim are quarrelsome by nature. Now, the Gemara had quoted Rav Yaakov, the son of Yaakov's daughter, in one context of teaching. Now, the Gemara presents another statement of his, the Omar of Yaakov, Brei de Bas Yaakov, Kol Shechavero Nenash Al Yodo, if somebody else is punished on his account, Ein Machnisen Oso B'chitzos Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In a certain sense, he's guilty, he's deserving of punishment, because he was the cause for someone else to be punished. So one who causes punishment to his fellow is excluded from a certain degree of closeness to the Shekhinah, to the Divine Presence. And this applies even in the case of a victim whose opposer was punished by God. Since the victim was the cause of another's suffering, he too must suffer. Is me Nolan? How do we see this? How do we derive this? Ilem mishum dechsiv, quoting a pasuk in Malachim Aleph. Vayomer Hashem mi yifate es achov v'yal v'yipol beromos gilad vayomer zeh b'kov v'zeh b'kov. Will Amir Hashem pick this up a little bit later on? Maybe we'll go back to v'amcha kimarive koe here on Daf Kuf Mem Tes Amid Beis, about one third down from the top.